this NPR station.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie. And Arlene Englehart is over there talking to our guests because we have a third guest in the studio. And we might as well introduce right now Dr. Ruth Whitney. Dr. Whitney, thank you so much for coming in because we are going to be talking about a very important report that is very, very troubling. And I'm so glad that you and your colleagues went to the work of exposing domestic violence, Pinellas County, really things we need to know. And so really thanks for coming in, particularly in this cold morning.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And but before we get into talking about domestic violence in Pinellas County, first, we lost a really important member of our community, WMNF community, Pinellas, our whole Tampa Bay area. Pam Wiener passed, and Arlene, I know you're going to give us more information right now.
Right. Well, our condolences go out to John and their daughter, Lily. We know the tough time it is for them, and we're with them all the way. I'm going to share with you what they said in Creative Loafing because I think it's the best thing that I've seen so far. If you were unsure about New Wave in the 80s, WMNF DJs Pam Wiener DeBrule and her husband John were there to help you understand. Their Saturday show, Radical Noise, which aired from 2:30 to 4 p.m., according to old-school Miami zine, Suburban Relapse, found the DeBrules bringing new wave punk and world music to the forefront of the community radio station, that is, our wonderful station, WMNF, at a time when commercial radio was still failing to embrace the sounds. On Wednesday morning, Pam's fans and the WMNF community at large woke up to the news that she had passed away. My darling Pam, the love of my life, passed away at home this morning in her sleep, John wrote on social media. Her sister Gail, 13-year-old daughter Lily, and John were close by, according to the Post. I believe Lily just turned 14 a couple of weeks ago. Everyone who knew her was touched by her kindness, he added. We will all miss her. One of the things that I remember most and always think of Pam with, in addition to all of the many things she did here at WMNF, was her work with the homeless and how many of the things that are happening, particularly in Pinellas County for the homeless, were started by Pam, and she constantly fought for medical care for those who were homeless. The Roslyn, New York native studied law at Boston University, where she met John, a longtime attorney at Gulf Coast Legal Services. DeBrule went to law school to help people and did just that during more than three decades-long career working primarily with homeless and or disabled clients who needed assistance collecting public benefits, securing safe housing, or finding stable income streams. I really care about my clients, not just as clients, but as people, Pam said. A lover of lightning hockey, she wrote in a bio, I have always considered my job as part lawyer and part social worker. Pam helped people on the radio, too, even in locations where WMNF, where she volunteered for more than 20 years, was barely listenable. You two were so important in this new immigrant life to America's life, Nadeem Khan wrote on Facebook. Khan, who would try and listen from Orlando, said that Tampa was the only place his old band, Operation Bell Bottoms, could play while Orlando's scene was still coming up. And I also want to mention, and I'm sure many of you will remember, the many times that Pam shared her love and shared global music with us on International Women's Day.
Absolutely.
And she will be missed for that and for many, many other contributions and for all of us that cared about her.
Yeah, she totally, to me, represents this WMNF community, wearing so many hats, and particularly today, so cold. You couldn't help it. I saw a couple of homeless people on the streets, and, you know, there aren't that many advocates that really put it on the line to help the homeless, and Pam was one of them. And you hope it's several people might step up and fill those shoes. And I particularly am thinking also then about International Women's Day, and I'm thinking of the time, and I don't know if Pam and John were involved in bringing the Mahatala Queens, you know, for a WMNF concert, but I particularly remember seeing it at Skipper's. And there Pam was out dancing away. She loved to dance, and she might have had her little daughter with her, I'm not sure. But I know she had Cheryl Mogul, and she probably had Linda Reisner. And I kind of vividly have that in my memory, watching them, really. And so I'm going to play this piece by the Mahatala Queens.
And I remember, or I think we should also send a special thought to Cheryl. I know that she and Pam were such close friends, and I understand that she was particularly good and helpful in taking care of Pam during the long illness.
Well, this song goes out to Pam, and they're dancing, and I hope that she's dancing and in a joyful state of existence right now, however it goes. But anyway, I can just see them dancing all on that floor, and so let's hear the Mahatala Queens. She was a very good dancer, Cheryl Mogul. I can just kind of see them out there dancing. So, Pam, rest in peace. A life very well lived, and we all miss you very much. Okay, Arlene, go ahead.
And support for WMNF comes from our members and Live Nation, presenting the Rodgers and Sheik Live in Concert at the Duke Energy Center for the Arts Mahaffey Theater, Friday, January 18th. Get more information at themahaffey.com.
Well, and now we're getting in because we're really lucky to have here Ruth Whitney. And Ruth is a scholar, teacher, and author of two books that compellingly advance the power of love to transform ourselves and our world. That sounds very fascinating, Ruth. Her intellectual curiosity, personal theology, and feminist perspective have long directed her life. After a stint in the first Peace Corps group, wow, Well, we'll have to ask you about that. She returned from Africa to attend the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. After receiving a master's and doctorate degree in religion, she spent decades teaching religion and women's studies at Rutgers, the University of South Florida, and other universities. Ultimately, she retired from teaching to pursue her great love of writing and scholarly research. And we are very lucky to have with us in the studio right now Dr. Ruth Whitney, and she was one of the people that wrote this really troubling but outstanding report, Domestic Violence in Pinellas County. So, Dr. Ruth Whitney, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. And I want to thank you and Arlene for all your years of producing this show for 22 years. Thank you.
Well, it's been a privilege. It really has. But I am fascinated. We have to get into some of your background before we get into this report. You were in the very first group of Peace Corps.
Yes, I was very fortunate when John Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." I joined, and we were the very first Peace Corps group to set foot on foreign soil. And at the time, the Republicans were saying we were kiddie corps, and we were going to ruin American foreign policy. Lies, of course, untrue. And it's still going today, and still in about 130, 140 countries around the world, and helping people develop all of these over 50, is it 55, going on 60 years.
Do you still have contact with some of your colleagues from the Peace Corps?
Yes, we've been having reunions about every 5 years. As you can see from the age, some of them can't get around very well anymore, so we keep saying that's the last reunion we'll have, but hopefully not.
And tell me, where were you in Africa?
Ghana, West Africa. Okay. I was in Kumasi, the Ashanti tribe.
Wow. I'm very impressed. And I'm also impressed that you were at Rutgers. And particularly with your combination of theology and feminist studies, I think that really brings us down to the violence against women. And domestic violence, period, isn't only against women, but mainly against women. And to me, Ruth, this problem has been going on forever. And to me, it really reflects a moral stain on this country that really is allowed because it's epidemic proportions. And when you think, that every 9 seconds a woman is assaulted in some way, it's a measure of the respect for women that it continues to be such a very serious problem. And I think it's really great because you are bringing it down, you and your group, to literally individual locales, so to speak, kind of like the indivisible groups that go see their congresspeople, talk about all kinds of things. And I really am shocked, really. That it's just that really some of these statistics are that bad in Pinellas. And so tell me, when I was talking to you earlier, you said you've been part of the domestic task force, violence task force, for years. Is that right? So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's a Pinellas County Domestic Violence Task Force that has been going since 1987. And it's trying to bring awareness to this problem and bring solutions. I'm also with the National Organization for Women, the Pinellas chapter. And violence against women is one of our core issues, and we are the ones who put out this report. And like you, domestic violence is a horrible crime. Many of us don't think of it as a crime, and to me, that's really important. It's a crime, and it hurts the women who are battered, and I'm sad to say seems to be a little increase in the number of men who are being battered, and it may be just the women are fighting back. But it really hurts their children, too. And children witness this and can be affected for life. And, of course, the person who's battered is affected for life, and sometimes this escalates to murder. So it's really a horrible crime.
Yeah, and I remember reading some statistics that actually young boys who are perhaps assaulted themselves in this battering situation, but if they witness it with their mother, that they have a higher incidence of growing up to be batterers, too.
Yes.
It becomes a way of life that's just absolutely, not just tragic. It really, I repeat, it's a reflection of morality in this country. It really is. And so, now tell me, this report, is this the first time you've done this kind of a report, or
We've done reports for over 20 years, but this one is much more thorough and includes much more information. And I do want to tell the audience where they can get their own copy of this. If you go to Facebook, Pinellas County Now, and the face in the front page of the Pinellas County Now Facebook page, on the left-hand side, it'll say Files. Click that, and the report will come right up. You can read it online, or you can go and run it off. It's 13 pages, color. It's got incredible information every page. So this report is much more thorough and much more informational than any report we've put out before.
Okay, and so forgive me, I've been fighting this kind of allergy cold.
And I see that we just got a thumbs up from Dorothy Abbott, too, for having you on today
hello.
As a guest.
Tell her hello for me.
Hello, Dorothy.
Another WMNF old loyalist that gave years of devotion, promoted the feminist cause. And so, you know, that I think the thing that troubles me so much about domestic violence is the lack of prosecution, the lack of taking it seriously. In other words, if the police get called, and usually that's who's going to get in there being called. And so then they're in this arbitrary, so to speak, situation. And rather than really, you know, really taking this seriously and thinking, whoa, you know, that this needs to be checked into. So often I think they kind of, and I imagine some of them can mediate relatively well. But to me, it's the appalling lack of follow through, you know, because the chances are if they're battering once, they're going to do it again. And again, and it's going to escalate usually. And you know that. And why do you think it is, Ruth?
Well, there's three ways that I hope we'll have time to get in today to reduce domestic violence, and that's really important.
We'll take time.
Pardon?
We'll take time. This is important.
Yeah, there's the police making more arrests and doing better investigations. That will help the prosecutors to prosecute the cases, but the biggest problem in Pinellas is the state attorney and the lack of prosecutions. If they would make more prosecutions and recommend that the batters get sentenced to batters intervention program, which is the program just developed to help them stop battering, that would really help reduce violence. And the third is the courts sentencing batters intervention. We have the statistics on how that, although the law says that if domestic violence is adjudicated as they are guilty of domestic violence, then the courts should sentence them to batterers intervention program. And you'll see that the percentages are low in the 20s and the 30s and even in the teens in injunctions. So we really need to improve. But as far as prosecution, there's a report points out that the National Institute of Justice did a study that reports that the average intimate partner violence prosecution rate nationwide is 64%. Now, if you look at Pinellas County, felony is a more egregious crime than a misdemeanor. And what we notice, it is really
31%.
Unfortunate that the prosecution rate for domestic violence felony rates from January to June 2017 was 31%. Now, that national average, I said, was 64%. The felonies, 31%. And that is lower than the misdemeanor prosecution rate of 39%. But what that means, if you take the 31%, that means that 69% of these batterers who were arrested get off with nothing. There's no punishment whatsoever, and they're not getting sentenced to the batterers intervention program, which is a program instituted in this county to stop them, to teach them not to batter. We are missing opportunities to really help reduce domestic violence.
You have covered so much in there. First of all, let's back up. This shocked me that Pinellas County law enforcement received 21,161 domestic-related calls for service in 2017. And unfortunately, we've had 52 domestic violent-related murders in the last 6 years. And now that is more than crimes of burglary, assault, vehicle theft, robbery, rape, and murder. And I mean, this
combined.
Is combined. And I mean, so here we've got an absolutely major crime, which in some instances results in death. I don't think you probably have that statistic, but I would suspect that the amount of actually prosecution of a burglary or a theft or a robbery is higher than it is for domestic violence. I'm just making a guess there.
Well, we haven't looked at the statistics, but what we do know is that many of those other crimes have specialized detectives who specialize in that crime, and that's what we want to ask the police to provide. In Pinellas County, currently, there are no specialized domestic violence detectives. If you have a specialized detective, then they can get the evidence better and get more prosecutions. The St. Pete is considering it and may soon have one. But in before the recession, we had two sheriff specialized detectives, and you know, the recession was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time ago.
Yes,
and the
is.
Economy has improved, and they have not reinstituted those specialized detectives. St. Pete had a domestic violence unit in there at that time in 2008, and they have not instituted, but hopefully they will get the other police departments like Palm Beach, Broward.
Yeah, I was just going to
all those.
You know this stuff so well, Ruth, so I'm just going to underscore some stuff for the listeners, that actually Pinellas ranks fifth out of 67 counties in a state for most offenses. And Broward, as you say, has twice the population, yet they have far less, DV offenses. And then Palm Beach has 1,436 less DV offenses, and that's domestic violence. I'm just trying to abbreviate it there. And so something's not happening well here in this county.
You yes.
know? I mean, that's what we really have to look at. And as you just pointed out, you know, that quite obviously that if a police officer is being called into a domestic violence situation, you know, that they need training. In other words, it's really going to be a heated situation, and it's going to be a lot of he said, she said kind of stuff, you know, because the chances are there's going to be some response by the woman to being pummeled, and not the least of which is maybe try to save her own life. And if a policeman doesn't have, or detective, some special abilities, some special training, where they can kind of calm the situation down, number one, and then kind of get the danger out of it, and then to elicit really what happened here, how did it happen, I can well see that this would be a really uncomfortable situation for a detective or a police officer unless they have some kind of special training.
Yes, and then they'll know to get the... I know a assistant chief of police, Tom Knapp, once said that if you do a good investigation, you can really find who the perpetrator is, who is the batter, in case they're both claiming that they're you know, were battered. And you can really find out who really was the one who originated the problem. And you can also get that evidence, so you'll get more prosecutions. But the other thing besides detectives, the trained detectives, we definitely need those. But we also need more victim advocates. The police departments and the state attorney's office have victim advocates. And for the audience who doesn't know what these are, they're trained people, often women, but they can be male as well, who work with the victim. And they can begin working as soon as the crime happened and all the way through the prosecution. The court system is very difficult for most people who haven't been to court, and the state attorneys have to speak to state attorneys and get in front of a judge. All of that's very difficult. Well, the victim advocate can really help the victim through that process. And some of the state attorneys will tell you that the problem with why they don't prosecute is that the victim doesn't cooperate. Well, if you had a enough victim advocates to go through the whole process, then you would get more cooperation. separation from the victims and more prosecutions successfully. And again, the recession. Before the recession, the sheriff's office had 7 victim advocates. They went down to 2 because of the recession, and they still have only 2 all these years later, 10 years later. The St. Pete Police Department had 4 victim advocates, and they're down to 2, and they still haven't gone up. So if we would get more victim advocates, we'd get more help for the victims, and we'd get more prosecutions.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but why? I mean, why? I mean, the economy's improved. 2008 was, 10 years ago? And so why? Because as I understand it, reading your report, there is money available in the state to get some help for, you know, the departments, for the advocates. And so why haven't they been asked for?
Well, we plan to go to the chiefs of police and ask for more victim advocates. The audience of those of you who are activists, if you have connections to any police department, you can be trying to put your word in that you know that victim advocates would be very, and specialized detectives would be very helpful for this police department to get those, so that we could reduce this crime.
And there are some different counties handle it differently. And I was really impressed. The Hollywood Police Department has recognized a large amount of calls for police service that have involved domestic-related victims. And so they have an offender-focused domestic violence initiative. And it's the first of its kind in Florida. I think it really sounds like a good idea. And it works to focus on repeat offenders of domestic violence by identifying the most repetitive and violent offenders and hold them accountable. And they have a much lower incidents of domestic violence than we do, and we're talking these kind of things that other counties have done a lot of things that they have reduced the amount. Now, you know, it's not just that they're hiding it in the corner; they've actually reduced it. And so, getting back to Pinellas again, okay, so the police have been there, and they decide that this person has been definitely a battered or abused, and so they take the batterer in, and what they might put them in jail, or what happens then to the batterer once the police have decided yes, crime has been committed here.
Okay, the state attorney has to decide whether to prosecute the case. They have to look at, you know, look at the evidence that the police bring, do an investigation, and decide whether to prosecute. And sad to say, and this would be on page 8, since you have a copy of the report. We've done the statistics, and it's really sad. We've said that 31% of felony cases are not prosecuted at all, or prosecuted, so 69%, and this is from January to June 2017, and felony cases, let me explain how bad a felony case is. They are cases are the most egregious, which include strangulation, aggravated battery, battery of a pregnant woman, attempted murder, and DV charges where the offender has a prior domestic violence conviction. Ooh, so this is really serious. This is a serious crime.
Life-threatening
yes.
injuries.
And then they're dropping, there are Pinellas State Attorney's Office is dropping 69% of those cases, meaning nothing happens whatsoever. But then if you look and it on this same page, you see with the ones that are prosecuted what happens. Only 51%, and this is out of the 31% who get prosecuted of the felonies, only 51% get jail time. Jail sentence, 35% get a probation sentence, 8% get a diversion program.
And diversion, now this is particularly bad, isn't it?
Yes.
And explain why it particularly is bad with diversion.
Because it does not result in a battery conviction. So it's not on their record that they did the crime and were convicted of it. And it doesn't stop them from having gun possession. And if anything, we want all the domestic violence batterers never to have access to a gun.
That's the underscoring element. Yeah. They can still have guns.
And only one out of all the cases, or 0.5%, got a trial. So most of them go to trial. And most important, if you batter, we want you to be sentenced by the judge to batterer's intervention. In fact, as I said earlier, the law says that they should be sent to batterer's intervention. And if you look there, 22% of the felonies are sentenced to batterer's intervention, meaning most of them, over three-fourths, are not sentenced to this program, which is purpose is to help them stop battering.
And you said that we want, well, but actually the law says too.
I mean,
we're talking about laws here.
Yeah.
That really mandate it. And then, it, you know, that, and we're going to, I'm going to quickly switch you to page 6, because this is really troubling. They very nicely, and again, we're talking to Ruth Whitney, and I strongly suggest that you get a hold of this report and spend some time studying it, because, you know, Pinellas, and I also then look at the statistics and realize that if Pinellas is 5th, which is very bad, Hillsborough is 3. And so, you know, what is happening here? But here they give the laws, and very specifically, you know, it says that, you know, they shall order the person to serve a minimum of 10 days in the county jail for the first offense, 15 for the second offense, and 20. And then on the right side, they very nicely have broken it down, statute not in force, that the rare example, 2-day jail session, says a sentence, a victim was battered and strangled, leaving the bruising on her body and redness on her chest, 2 days. A victim was pushed and kicked on her chest, causing her to fall down in front of several witnesses. 2 days. A victim was punched in the face multiple times, causing her face to bleed and a 2-inch cut on the bridge of her nose. And thank heavens she didn't get a skull fracture or a bad concussion. Again, 2 days. And I'm really curious because, you know, the Batterer Intervention Program, I would imagine that statistics have shown that actually this does improve the relationship of this man and this woman or whoever the couples are. And that obviously it can work. And that rather than sticking someone in jail, I mean, no one wants to have someone kind of locked away with no chance of, you know, improving, et cetera. And here again, I find it really troubled. Here again, the law, 741.325, requirement, the program shall be 29 weeks. That's not, you know, in length, and includes 24 weekly sessions. And then here we are in Pinellas, statute not in force, zero. DV abusers, and again, domestic violence in Pinellas Criminal Court were ordered to 29 weeks, zero from January to June 2017. And a court usually orders abusers 26 weeks. Why 26 and not 29 or 12 weeks? I mean, why? Why, when this to me seems to me a method that would improve everybody's lives, wouldn't this be really one of the first things they really want to do, particularly if it's not a felony?
Yes, and they really do need to do this. And it's sad that we have trouble getting the judges to do training for judges. They're this group by themselves, and we have tried at different times to get them to have training where they would understand this importance of this program.
Ruth, you know, here, have you sat in on any of these trials? Because I'm remembering actually, you know, getting my medical degree, that actually I spent some time in juvenile court, and nothing appalled me more because we would actually be with the psych department there. Right then I was serving that clerkship, and we would have studied the cases in detail, and we have a real good idea what this child's background, and we had spent a lot of time trying to figure out what was best. And there I would follow it up, and I go down, and the judge didn't even have to open our report. And I cannot tell you the number of times, by far the majority, they didn't even open the report. And I found that so utterly disdainful, you know, and I would try and talk to them afterwards, and they would just think, you know, that they didn't even want to be on that court, to tell you the truth. And tell me, because not that long ago in our country's history, it was legal for a man to hit his wife. You know, that was not a crime. And so why, if you see a woman that's been strangled, or she's got bruises all over, or she's probably had a broken nose, maybe she's got very serious damage to her orbital, fracture of her eye, whatever, that Why would not this be looking at, or two men or two women that got in this kind of a fight, you know, but it wasn't a domestic violence situation, that would be looked upon as a serious crime of assault and battery, you know, and you would hope they would go appropriately. So why, if you have sat in some of those courts, why this dismissive attitude of judges?
Yeah, it's this is what feminism has been trying to reverse for decades and decades now, that women are not considered equal. And until we're considered equal, this kind of attitude among men, whether they be a judge or a prosecutor or a police officer or in any position, we have to continue working for equality for women, and that we are looked at as equals. But there's the cases that don't even get to the judge.
I was going to say.
Yeah, let's look at page 7. Let me read. These are real cases.
Oh, these are hard.
Yeah, this is where the police officer goes to the scene of a domestic violence, and he makes an arrest, and he writes down exactly what he saw and you know, will witness to in the court. And I'm going to look at the second one down on the left. This is June 2017. This is the exact words of the police officer. The defendant punched the victim in the face one time. This was witnessed by two independent witnesses. Now, if you have, I'm editorializing here, if you have witnesses, they can act, you know, in the case and help get the guy prosecuted. So that's a good thing. They've got the police officer, now they've got two witnesses. Reading again, quote, the victim was bleeding from the mouth and had one of her bottom teeth knocked out. The defendant had a small bloody abrasion on his right fist that appeared to be the shape of a tooth. The police officer arrested for felony aggravated domestic violence. The case was not filed. He got off with nothing. Nothing happened to him. He never even got to court.
And let's do the one above it, too. These are really hard. And if anybody's listening right now that you've, that please, if you've had a problem in your life with being abused, et cetera, and this is too uncomfortable, please just don't listen right now. Because I found reading these cases, I was just being furious. And this is another. This is 12-22-14. Defendant became upset and punched victim twice in the head. Defendant then placed victim in a headlock and bit the victim on her forehead. Death's bite took a large chunk of skin out of the victim's forehead, causing a large injury and permanent disfigurement. The victim was transported to the hospital. The deaf fled the incident location. All of the incident was the presence of the victim's four children and the deaf's daughter. The two are married, reside with one another. He was arrested for aggravated domestic violence. The charge was not filed. He was later arrested on domestic violence charge on the same victim in 2017, and the case was not filed. On 3/5/18, the same defendant pushed the victim to the ground, struck her with a closed fist repeatedly, causing visible cuts and scrapes. There is a witness to this offense. This case was not filed. On 5/3/18 and 5/28/18, he committed felony DV on the same victim, causing the victim to be hospitalized, and she required stitches. And I might add, your report also shows that the chances are very high she would have had to pay, if she didn't have insurance, for those the hospitalization or injuries out of her own pocket. Because there's no effort to try and give any expenses to the victim.
Yes. I mean, these are egregious cases. And in meeting with some officials at the state attorney, we actually did take in some of these cases a couple years ago. And they admitted that some of the cases could have been filed.
But why? I'm giving you a problem here because is it because the prosecuting attorneys or district attorneys are so overworked that they don't have the time to really spend a lot of time on this? I mean, I don't understand, because to me this is egregious battery. you know. And it shouldn't make any difference whether it's a husband and wife. I mean, really, I don't understand why that makes a difference. And why would they not file something this serious?
Well, and that's one of the problems. One of our solutions is more state attorneys. Look on your report page 8 under the misdemeanor side. In June 2017, a misdemeanor a DV attorney received 16 new domestic violence cases in 3 days.
Wow.
Now, how can you do thorough investigations
exactly.
in 3 days? For the entire month of June, this same attorney received 46 new cases. That's more than one a day. He's supposed to investigate, speak with the victims, speak with the witnesses, talk to the police officer. How can you do a thorough job and have the time to do that? We want them to get more state attorneys and, again, more victim advocates in order to really be able to, and we want more training for we do have a misdemeanor domestic violence unit at the state, at our Pinellas State Attorney's Office, which is good. And he instituted that over, I think it was 1996. So we've had that for over 20 years. And it does help with, you notice the misdemeanor prosecution rate is higher than the felony, even though the felony crimes are worse. Which there's more evidence, so you would think there's more prosecutions. But it's because we have this unit.
And again, we should remind the listeners that domestic violence actually is the single biggest crime they have. That it's more than aggravated assault, vehicle theft, robbery, rape, and murder combined.
Yeah.
And it's far more than burglary. Yet, and I know you haven't gotten this data, I would be very curious to know in the state's attorney's office when a person comes in for burglary or vehicle theft or murder, you know, how many of those cases, you know, are not filed? I think a comparative would be very interesting, actually.
Yeah, that's a good point, and we should maybe... we're volunteers doing this work.
I think you've got a good idea there. I think you've done incredible work. I really do. And I think it's so important. And I'm sorry, it really bugs me because I'm going back to the point that it used to be legal that a husband could strike and batter his wife.
Yeah.
That he was just, it's legal. And it's really troubling to see in this day and age that so little in so many ways has changed. And it's a lack of respect for women. I'm sorry. It is a lack of respect for women and really a terrible, terrible challenge to their autonomy as human beings. And, I strongly suggest, because they've really, it's beautifully done. I really want to recommend you that, when you're showing a graph like that, because I know from all the research I've been involved in that when you have graphs like this, it really zeroes in. And you've got the data right there. And you can look at this and you say, whoa. One trial, not guilty, and then you look at these and it's there. You can't deny it. And so, that's all right. I thought, if we have to give the whole hour to this, we will. Arlene, you go ahead over there.
Well, I just wanted to mention that we just had a call from one of our listeners, and this man said that he has been involved. He took a domestic violence course. For 26 weeks.
A batterer's intervention.
Yes. Yeah. And that he was amazed at how much he learned and how helpful it was. And so he wanted to get that word out. And he also wanted to get the word out that his experience with judges was that they take this very seriously. So if it gets to the judge, it will probably be taken seriously. But unfortunately, as you've been discussing, too many of them don't make it to the judge.
And let's go back. Say the person's been put in jail for a very short time. Now, obviously, jail calls are very important. And I thought it was really interesting that there's an Officer Green, and we should acknowledge him, because he's with the Largo Police Department, and he's done an outstanding job monitoring jail calls, arresting offenders for violation. Because, Ruth, what is the problem here with these jail calls?
Well, if we read the example that we have on the left side there, this shows how the batter continues to manipulate. They manipulate, I mean, they not only physically batter, but they also manipulate psychologically and intimidate and threaten and make the woman live in fear. So this manipulation goes on even though he's in jail. And this is a call on the left side of where the batter is speaking to the woman he battered, and he says, "This is your fault. I'm in here. If you didn't provoke me, I wouldn't have hit you." I mean, notice the lies here. It's her fault.
Totally.
I'm looking at 15 years in prison if you don't drop the charges. That's probably not true. Also, he's lying, he's trying to intimidate her. "I can't pay the bills unless you get me out. You have to go to the courthouse and fill out the request not to prosecute form."
And well, the chances are she never even knew of this form.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be any such form because it's the state is to prosecute. It's not the victim who prosecutes. The state attorney, our government says this is against the law, so it's the state who should be prosecuting, and the victim shouldn't be able to say, "I don't want you to do this." But that's one of the things that the state attorneys use as an excuse not to prosecute, is the victim doesn't cooperate. Well, she's not cooperating because they, in these jail calls, and they live in fear of this man, and he manipulates her, even from jail. So if they would listen to these calls, they could, see that he is misbehaving even from jail. And
this is where interns and volunteers or civilian investigators can listen.
Yes.
I mean, but when you realize the circumstances and you think, well, actually, this is not just eavesdropping. This is trying to prevent a very serious, because I'm going here again in your jail calls. The lead prosecutor of the domestic violence unit in Queens, New York, estimated that 75% of domestic violence offenders violate an order of protection within 72 hours. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, And think of that, and think of the strangulation and the strikes, and just really probably it's extremely fortunate that more aren't killed than are. Serious.
Well, if they would really start the arrest and the prosecution and the batter's intervention on the first time they catch the guy and arrest him, often that's not really the first time, because it takes a while often for the woman. She doesn't call the first time she's battered, but she finally gets up the courage and it's serious enough that she calls the police. If they would really prosecute at that point and get him into batter's intervention, then you might stop the whole line where it just keeps escalating, and he does it to her and to other women, and it goes on. But let's look at injunctions.
And you said that, and I was just thinking a case in this area, I don't remember exactly where it was, that the woman actually was killed by her husband. And they said that he had never actually been reported to be an abuser or a batterer, ever.
Yeah. It's many women don't report at all. They live with this. They're afraid to let anyone know that this has happened to them. But let's look at page 9. We have.
And again, real quickly, Arlene, tell them again how they can get a hold of this report, because
I've been trying to actually post it and not having a lot of success.
Okay.
On our Facebook page, but I will post directions on how you can get there. If you go to Pinellas County Now and open that site, you will see a menu on the left side of the page. If you go to the bottom thing on the menu, which says Files, click on that, and then you can click on the report. It's really
very
simple
one.
To get there. And it's the very first report that comes up.
It'll be on Pinellas Now Facebook page. So, and you can either run it off or you can read it online, and you'll see it comes up in living color right away.
Nice colors, incidentally.
Yes.
it highlights things and makes it much easier to get through the data.
Yes, and we have our people worked very hard to pick the right color and everything.
They did a good job.
injunctions are a thing that a woman can get even if she doesn't report to the police, or you know, she can try and get an injunction because she's afraid of him. There are over 3,000 injunctions that are brought for domestic violence, dating, sexual violence injunctions in 2017. Only 1,000, over 1,100, were granted by the judge. So a judge has to decide if the woman can get an injunction. And we want the judge to order all these people who get injunctions to batterers intervention programs. And only 13% were ordered. And this is the way to get them to stop battering. Now, let's look at some of the reasons why they were denied. These are allegations on temporary injunctions for protection that were denied in Pinellas County.
Again, this will be hard to listen to.
Okay, you go ahead with one.
First one. Yeah, I had
And you're listening to WMNF from a woman's point of view, and we're talking with Dr. Ruth Whitney about the recently released report on domestic violence in Pinellas County, put out by the Pinellas County Now.
First one, and this stuff is hard, but this is what domestic violence is. It's a disgrace in this country that it is the epidemic that it is, and so if it takes the truth to make people see it, then this is the truth. And here is a true one. Headbutted me, hitting me in the forehead, said to me, "You are about to be murdered." Prior to this, he hit me while my eyes were closed, felt like a fist, and blackened my eye.
And the judge denied this. Even this is what the victim wrote
for
the inform.
For an injunction.
In order to get an injunction.
And denied.
He grabbed me by the neck, pushed me against the wall, and choked me. He said he was going to slit my throat. Grabbing by the throat, forced me against the wall as he squeezed my neck hard enough to leave marks. Denied by the judge.
He grabbed my hair, slammed my face to the floor. My middle son was present, recorded the whole altercation. He has choked, slapped, bruised me. He has threatened me with his swords. He's probably got, swords, not words, swords. Denied. Injunction, request for injunction, denied.
Yeah, and some of these, they had even been arrested. The batterer had even been arrested for domestic violence by the police, and they went for an injunction after their batterer was arrested and asked for an injunction of the judge, and he denied it. When the man has been arrested for domestic violence, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it really doesn't. And this is what one has to ponder. And I will tell you, when you go over this, and it's just beautifully done. It really is. It really facilitates your getting the information and understanding it. You have to question why. I mean, there are so many places, every single place when I went through this, I would find myself writing why. Why? Why? And it comes down to the bottom line that women are not respected in the most primal way, literally, the autonomy of body, not only to control it, but to lose it. I mean, to lose it. And it's that one case that Ruth read, you know, that there, you know, you hassled me and you just badgered me and that's why I did it. It's your fault. And then so many people will say, well, why doesn't she leave him? All she has to do is leave him. And has no sense of that's the most dangerous time of all. If she doesn't have a very careful plan, the chances are she will be very seriously injured or perhaps murdered. I mean, it is a very, very difficult situation. And we're talking not just an abuse of power, but a really moral just hole that reflects society as much as it does the individual, at least to me.
Yes, and your point is very well taken, that it's one of the most dangerous times if you are trying to leave. But the other thing is, the question, why doesn't she leave, is the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, why do men batter?
Exactly.
And that is the question that our society really needs to work on.
And Ruth, Dr. Ruth Whitney, I'm looking at the time, and I realize we have just about out of time here. And so, Arlene, do we have any announcements that you want to quickly get in?
Nothing in addition to, I think this is so important, and I really want to thank you, Ruth, for coming in today and sharing this with our listeners. And I have found a way to post it so they can go to our Facebook page if they'd like to and find the link to the report there.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Okay. You have about 40 seconds to just summarize what we've been talking about.
Well, I want to thank you all. This is a serious problem, as we've said. And you can join Pinellas now. If you want to email me at ruthwhitney@verizon.net, I can connect you up with Pinellas Now. Our meetings are the second Wednesday of every month at the Good Samaritan Church in Pinellas Park. That's 61st Street and Park Boulevard, second Wednesday. We would welcome you. We're working to get equality for women, which in the end is the way to solve this problem. And we're working on all different aspects, including our committee to end domestic violence. Thank you.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. This has been From a Woman's Point of View. Just keep it tuned here all day, people. And I was hoping that would play. There we go.